Welcome back to another episode of Feel Good Life. This is Jennifer James. I'm your host, and today I have a good friend with me, Michael Klein of USA Rice. He is the Vice President of Communications and Strategic Development there, and we are going to chat all things USA Rice and specifically talk a lot about the Rice Outlook Conference that's coming up in December, which is a great time always. So welcome, Michael. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you, Jennifer. Long time, first time.
Long time, first. So Michael is also the host of The Rice Stuff, which my Arkansas accent has a really hard time saying, The Rice Stuff, because I want to say The Rice Stuff, as you always tell me. And so he's a podcast pro, so we're going to chit chat about all kinds of things today. So Michael, first of all, just tell us about yourself and kind of what your background is and how you ended up in the rice industry.
Sure. Well, this sometimes gets me in trouble in agriculture, right? Because I am from, you should pardon the expression, New York City, where I was born in Queens and raised there and went to school there at NYU. But I studied film and political science. And when you do that at NYU, you either go into you go to Hollywood and you work in movies, or you stay in New York and you work in advertising and public relations. And that's the path that I took. And I worked at some PR firms and some advertising firms. I was a creative guy, you know, a production guy, filming things and stuff like that. And then decided that I wanted to get involved in politics and kind of merge the two together, the political science degree and the communications degree. And so I came down to Washington and started working on political campaigns and worked in the House and the Senate and on campaigns and then state campaigns and some presidential campaigns. And then eventually found my way to the American Forest and Paper Association, which is the trade association, as you would imagine, for the forest products industry. There is a trade association for everything in Washington. In fact, there is even a trade association for trade associations. I'm a member, ASAE, I'm a member of it. But we represented the, you know, the landowners and the tree farmers and also the paper mills. It's actually a similar setup to USA Rice in terms of, you know, a very vertically integrated trade association. And, you know, trees are a crop. It's just got a longer growth cycle, you know, 14 years or 16 years or in some cases more. But I worked for them for about 7 years and then went out and hung my own shingle doing some speech writing and communications and then joined USA Rice in 2013. So, and it's been, you know, donuts for dinner ever since.
Donuts, rice flour donuts, right?
Rice flour donuts. Yeah, of course.
So how did that work out? When you first came into USA Rice, you were just strictly kind of like the director of communications, I believe. Is that how that started?
So, yeah. So communications at USA Rice, but prior to me being here, had not been like a senior level. So Betsy Ward, our former CEO, president, CEO, you know well, and I actually worked with before as well in Washington. It's a small, you know, it's a like the rice industry. It's a small community, and she brought me in as vice president of marketing and communications.
Okay.
And so that's what I was doing. I oversee the daily and, you know, all kinds of other communications, writing speeches, writing testimony, which you're familiar with, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then it slowly kind of my portfolio kind of expanded. Some people retired. Ann Banville had been the vice president of domestic promotion at USA Rice for years and years and had done a fantastic job and really pivoted the industry and domestic promotion, getting nutrition involved and making that a cornerstone. And then she eventually decided to retire. And so Betsy moved domestic promotion into my portfolio. And then most recently, I guess about 2 years ago, I turned it over to Cameron Jacobs, who you got to have on as well. And then I took communications, marketing communications and strategic development is what I do.
Okay. All right. Yes, I remember Ann Banville. That's been a few years ago. That's a name I haven't thought about recently. So she was actually working in some of the sustainability stuff that came over, I guess, from those domestic promotions when the mills and things were kind of falling into a lot of those sustainability things. So remember her. I wonder how
she's
doing.
She was great. She was a great role model. She brought up a lot of the people who are still here. That's one of the things about USA Rice is, you know, I've been here, what, something like 13 years or 14 years or something like that. And I'm not the exception, right? There are plenty of people who have been here for decades and decades. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, it's, you know, Anne was here for a long time. And the people that she brought up with her, the people who worked for her have been promoted and they're still here and stuff. So it's a great organization.
So that's a good comment, though, about that we have had a lot of longevity, and especially rice. It's kind of a unique crop. It's a little bit different. You know, it's a commodity, but it's a little bit different than the other commodities and things like that. So it's probably helped with our strength throughout PR, policy, all kinds of things that we work on.
Absolutely. We say all the time here in Washington that rice, you know, fights above its weight class. And you've talked about this on the podcast here about the size of rice compared to something like corn or beans or something like that. And it really is, it's impressive. And it's kind of awesome to sit back and think about that we, with fewer than 6,000 growers and 3 million acres max, have a seat at the table the same as corn and wheat, the cattlemen, and some of these other commodities and crops that are so much larger in footprint and value. And I think it speaks to the organization, and it speaks to the members, the volunteer leaders like yourself, who just create a great respected atmosphere for the commodity.
Yeah. It's been kind of shocking over the years to watch it really transform from when I first got involved a couple of years ago, a couple of decades ago, almost three decades ago now, I guess, that we really have built a really good trade association that's very representative of the entire industry, which you noted that at the beginning a little bit, but I think that's one thing that's definitely key.
Yeah. USA Rice is an umbrella organization, right? And like I was saying about being vertically integrated. So we represent, you know, as we call them, the five families, right? So you've got the Rice Millers Association, which actually formed in 1899. You've got the USA Rice Council that formed in 1958. And then you've got the newer components, USA Rice Farmers, USA Rice Merchants, and then the Rice Foundation. And all of those are independent organizations. They have their own boards. They have their own budgets, their own audits, finance, everything. But it's kind of all managed under the umbrella of USA Rice, you know, which is where we are, and, you know, has the USA Rice has a board. All those organizations have their own boards. And there's tension at times. There's natural tension because you have, you know, buyers and takers, you know, makers and takers there around the table. So it's very impressive to see people put that aside and take off their company hat and put on their industry hat. They're able to do it at the board meetings, at the meetings, at the events and things. So it's always encouraging to see, and it's nice to see. You know, we had at the American Forest and Paper Association, it was the same relationships, and, you know, it was tougher, frankly, and, you know, the general counsel's office was large, and they reviewed every agenda, and they reviewed all the minutes, and they sat in meetings, and I was in many meetings that were stopped abruptly by lawyers, and that's never happened at USA Rice in 13 years, and that's a testament to how seriously everyone takes the job of, we know we're a small industry by comparison, and we need to be together on this.
Yeah. And I think your analogy about taking your company hat off, or I have learned from the leaders ahead of me in the rice industry that's a must. We just have to do that to be able to come together because we are so small. So not only on the staff side and the leadership from staff that you talked about, but the leaders, the farmer leaders, the miller leaders, the merchant leaders, all those folks ahead of me too have done the same thing. And so it's a good legacy, I guess, hopefully we will always continue to follow. We must.
Yeah. And it's not easy.
Sure. It's not easy. When you're at a board meeting and you absolutely 100% disagree with the policy that's at hand, and it's kind of fun to watch the dynamics develop and mold and shape, and the give and the take back and forth, and we come up with something that when we walk out of the door we can all support.
And you don't only have the sector differences, you have the regional differences, right? Because got the Mid-South, and then you've got California, and people are doing different things. And frankly, we keep getting a little bit larger on that front. You know, Florida joined recently. They grow rice, on the sugar fields. And Cameron and I keep going after North Carolina and South Carolina, where rice actually started and then kind of migrated west, but is back there. And so we're trying to get them on board. So that, you know, that's one of those things that and just add another layer of complexity.
Well, and we don't think about it here in Arkansas or the Mid-South, but wild rice too, right? Y'all interface with the wild rice folks as well.
We do. We do with California wild rice and Minnesota wild rice. Wild rice, technically not rice, right? It's a grass, but it's so similar. And from a culinary perspective, and you know, and a commodity perspective. And so, yeah, we do promotions. USA Rice does promotions for the wild rice industry. If you look at our recipe development, which is a big part of what we do on the, both the domestic and the international promotion side, there's always some wild rice recipes in there. We work with it with our restaurant partners and the folks that we're putting together, you know, special programs and incentive programs and stuff. Wild rice is always a part of it, too.
So underneath your title, communications seems like it's an easy topic, but there's a lot that falls under that. You mentioned the Rice Daily, which for any of my listeners who don't subscribe to that, that are in the rice industry or in the policy arena, in fact, I'll be sure and link how to sign up to get that email. What other kind of communications are we sending out through USA Rice?
Well, we have a big social media presence, as you would imagine. That's kind of, it's slowed down a little bit over the last couple of years. Twitter or X has become a little less useful, I think, to folks. And so we've kind of backed off from that a little bit. But we do have two X accounts. One is industry facing, inward facing, and one is outwardly facing. And we have Instagram, which again is more consumer facing, and we're on LinkedIn and Facebook, of course, which is probably one of the oldest ones and the one that keeps going the most. We also produce a newspaper. It used to be a quarterly newspaper, and now as we've tightened our belts, it went to three times, and you know, we'll see how many we get to do going forward. But we do that newspaper, and then also, as you mentioned before, the podcast, which is twice a month, and we have just put out, we've just finished our 125th episode. So
oh my gosh, I didn't realize it had been going that long.
Yeah, and it's your fault too.
You know, I tell people, fault. I will take credit for it though.
Yeah, that we were walking through one of those over air conditioned hallways in one of our meetings, summer meetings, and you said, why don't we have a podcast? And I didn't have a good answer, and so I went back and started to do research, and I don't know, about 8 months later or something, we launched the Rice Stuff,
and it's going really well. The content's great.
Yeah, we do the mix of everything. It's mostly inwardly facing, right? I mean, you know, 45 minutes on Delphacid recently, you know, and rice breeding and agronomy and things like that. But then we also bring in chefs, and, you know, Sarah Moulton's been on the podcast, and some of our influencers have been on the podcast, and trend watchers and stuff. It's, we try to have a mix of things, but we know it definitely skews towards insider baseball. And well, you're the intro for it. You did the intro for years and years. We recorded it and we just kept using it and using it and using it.
Because you wanted to hear me say the Rice Stuff, right? Yeah. So let's talk about the Outlook Conference. That's also underneath your hat of duties to oversee.
Yeah, programming. I work on the programming for it. It's a big team that puts that together. But yeah, the USA Rice Outlook Conference, it's the largest rice-specific event in North America. It's always in December, like the first week or so in December. The location moves around. This year in 2025, it's December 7th through 9 in New Orleans, Louisiana, at the Hilton Riverside. And yeah, it's always one of those things that the Outlook Conference is something that's been around for more than 30 years. It started as the researchers from the land-grant universities would kind of get together and share notes in the wintertime when you all had harvested and then were off in duck blinds or whatever it was you were doing. The researchers would get together and kind of compare notes, and it kept getting bigger and bigger, and they eventually at some point came to USA Rice, and this is before my time, before your time, and said, hey, can you take this over, put this on? And then we started adding things to it. As I said, it's been more than 30 years. I think the first one was, the first modern iteration was in like Lake Charles in 89 or 90, somewhere around there. And every year we add something to it, and we have general sessions with big name speakers. We do an awards luncheon that is a real highlight, and you've been up on the stage, and Media Marvin's been up on the stage. Your dad was got the Lifetime Achievement Award or Rice Lifetime Achievement Award, I think, in 2018, right? And then in 2019, you were the Rice Farmer of the Year. And there's other ones too. There's an Industry Award and Rice Farmer of the Year Industry Award and the Lifetime Achievement Award, and then USA Rice has a Sustainability Award that you were instrumental in getting started, and the Conservation Award, a Political Action Committee Award, and some other things. We do the National Rice Month Video Scholarship is unveiled there at that luncheon. This is sponsored by Horizon Ag, that we're very happy to have them as a partner. And then there's a trade show. We have 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 square feet of space for a trade show. And we actually built, in 2019, we started putting our breakout sessions, our education stages, in the convention center, in the trade hall. And we have three stages in there, and there's more than 20 hours of educational programming, concurrent programming going on throughout the whole conference. And it's a range of topics from everything from, you know, how to market your rice to how to tap into consumer trends to market analysis and situation, you know, the situation overseas, economic analysis, foreign policy analysis, whether it's Farm Bill or H2A or whatever kind of policy thing is going. We bring in experts and we have these, you know, these concurrent sessions. And then, of course, where it all started, the researchers, we still have the researchers do their presentations. It's very, very well attended. It's, you know, usually about 20 or 25 minutes per state. They talk about not only the crop outlook, but also kind of what their research and what they're working on. And so it's really, it's a great conference. And there's plenty of networking opportunities and there's some dinners and other things. So it's a fun event. It's a lot of work goes into programming it, but I think it's worthwhile for folks.
Oh, I definitely think it's worthwhile. And the networking is fantastic because it's, like you mentioned earlier, all the rice states have representation there. Then a lot of companies that have products for the rice industry and or ancillary things. Like last year when it was in Little Rock and I went through that the trade show, which is so important to walk through, because I actually talked to a guy at one of the booths that I really didn't think I was interested in, right? But I was trying to, you know, show support for the folks who had the booths, and ended up did some extra work with them after the conference, and they've added some financial information to my business that I didn't know I needed, you know, a good thing. And so I think it's important when you're at the Outlook Commerce to be sure and go around and just say, hey, what do y'all do? What do you offer? Because you never know. You don't know what you don't know that you might need, right? It was a good learning event for me that it's really important to go ahead and meet those folks that are set up there, because they're not going to be there if they don't have something that's probably going to support somebody in the rice industry.
And one of the most important ones that I think that I'm the most kind of excited about is, excited is maybe the wrong word, but we have a big push on rural mental health, which is a huge problem. You've been talking about it for weeks and weeks on here, and years even, you know, about resiliency and how tough it is in the, you know, in the farm economy now, and just in general, you know, that it's okay to not be okay. And we had one of our headliner a few years ago was Dr. Shimmy Kang, who came and did the thing about play. That was the last time, that was when we were in Little Rock in 2019. And she did a whole thing about how important it is to take a break and to play. And we had games all over the exhibit hall, you know, from Jones Brothers in there in Little Rock. And it was just one of those things, people, you know, you just need to take a break. It's okay to not be okay. And so we have we've had a speaker come in every year on this. And this year we have a new partnership with AgriHealth, which is a Louisiana nonprofit that works specifically in the ag community on mental health issues. And they're doing a training on essentially how to see if someone is perhaps in distress or in trouble and how to help them and how to reach out to them and not do it yourself, but to refer them to get the right help that they need. And so it's so important. And it's one of those things we're actually going to be pushing that session a lot, because it's one that, you know, people don't like to talk about it, but everybody's stressed, especially now. And it's just important to do. And it's okay. It's okay to not be okay, yeah, as you say. Right. And we had Dr. Archie Manning on our podcast a couple of years ago talking about this same thing, and the resources are out there. And so we're just trying to make sure that those get to people. So it's not all about bins and water flow and meters and things like that. It's also about, you know, yourself.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad. And there's been a lot more highlight on mental health. It's unfortunate that we have to have a crisis type stressful situation for that to become more in the forefront, but hopefully it'll stay there even when we have better times, because the world we live in is pretty stressful no matter what profession you're in or what time of year it is or any of that. There's too much. It's I call it overwhelm. I think it's more overwhelm and stress at the same time anymore, because there's just so much flying at all of us.
I talk about it with my kids all the time. They say, you know, try to explain to them what a busy signal was and what it meant when your friend didn't, before your friend had an answering machine. Like, well, you tried to call them and it didn't work. What are you going to do? I guess I'll go ride my bike over to their house and see if they're there. And if they're not there, I'll sit on the stoop and wait, you know, but like and you didn't have this constant barrage of information or entertainment or poison or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a different time.
So we do have some big headliner names speaking. I think they've all been announced. Is there any one of those you want to highlight?
Well, we have, I'm very excited in our general session. We have Steve Lurch, who is an innovation evangelist. I kind of made that up. I don't know if he, what he calls himself, but Steve Lurch is a guy. He's actually spoken to the Outlook conference before a number of years ago. He's a guy who spent 10 years at Google, and he was in charge of marketing strategy and really navigating and helping companies navigate Google and all this information that we're talking about here. And he is just a super dynamic speaker. He's fun. He's funny. He's interesting, very insightful. And so he's doing a presentation totally different from what he did before. I think he's going to touch on some of the things that, you know, everybody talks about AI. AI is the new sustainability, right? It used to be that everybody said sustainability and nobody knew what it was, or it was different to everybody. And now it's the same with AI. And so he's one of those ones who's been on the front lines of it. So he's going to be able to talk about that. And his company is StoryArc Consulting. And his issue is about one I think is near and dear to your heart, is about telling the story. Mm-hmm. You have to tell the story of what you're doing or what you want people to understand. And Steve Lurch does that. And so he's a headliner on the 8th. And then we also have Nick Badminton, who we've been trying to get for a number of years. He's British originally. He lives in Canada now. And he's like this, if you saw him walking down the street, you might cross the street because he's like bald and tattooed and looks like he's going to start a fight. But he's a futurist. And we've had a few futurists in the past, specifically food futurists. He's more of a technology and business and economic futurist. And so he's going to be talking about, you know, kind of where we're heading. And I think that's, my gosh, that's the question that everybody wants to know, is what's happening with, you know, AI and the world economy. And is the United States turning inward? Is everybody else turning inward? Is it going to be back to a more global economy and stuff? So Nick is also a very funny guy, very personable guy. And so the two of them are doing keynote speeches on that Monday. And we're really looking forward to it. It's going to be a great session, packed. And we have other people who are invited who I don't think I can say because, well, government shutdown. But they're very high-ranking people in the government whose names rhyme with Mook Nolens. She's been invited. We don't know what's going
to
happen.
Okay. Well, that would be a great honor to have her show up in support of us too. So, yeah. So looking forward to those two speakers, and maybe the futurist can just pencil it out 1, 2, 3, and we'll be ready to
answer all your questions.
Absolutely. Yep. Sounds great. Yep. We tell them
speak for 10 minutes and have 50 minutes for questions.
Oh boy, in that room, that might be going to a little way longer than 50 minutes. I have a feeling. So when you attend the conference, are there ways to get professional credits?
No, so we don't do that. So we've looked at that, into that. And I know there are some places that do those continuing education credits and some other conferences that do it. We've looked at it, and it's not impossible to do, but it's one of those things where it's a state, the state that you're in kind of regulates it. Mm-hmm. And since the Outlook conference moves around, last year we were in Arkansas, this year we're in Louisiana, next year we'll be in Tennessee, then the year after that probably in California, and we move around, we would have to kind of redo it every time. And it doesn't mean we can't do it, it's not an excuse, but we just have not pursued that yet. I do think it's something, we looked at it a little bit in 2019, and then of course the pandemic derailed everything, and kind of everything that we had been thinking about doing, you know, kind of got put on hold for a year. We didn't have a conference in 2020. But then we were back in 2021 and we were just kind of picking up steam. We had made so much progress up to 2019. 2019 was one of our biggest years ever, and in Little Rock. And then we have to kind of rebuild it. And so I think that I feel like the credits may be something that comes back, but at the moment it's not something that we do. But it doesn't mean that there's not great information there. You know, we have all kinds of, you know, speakers from the various companies, whether they're, you know, drone companies or whether they're chemical companies or, you know, crop protectant companies. You know, they're all there, and it's all also kind of mixing and mingling in the, you know, we have a couple of receptions that we do in the trade hall, and so there's time to mix and mingle with folks. As you said, go up to somebody and say, "What is this? What do you, you know, what's this all about? What do you do?" So you can get informal credits. We'll give you a sticker.
Exactly. Well, and, you know, some of the best information you find actually is, you know, sitting around the appetizer table and getting into good conversation one-on-one or a small group sometimes brings a lot more to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I guess everyone's so willing to share their expertise and share their knowledge. And that's something that I've found in the rice industry. Again, going back to, you know, coming from New York and having no agriculture, you know, in my family, I always find people to be so welcoming and so generous with their time to really explain, you know, what things are and to not make me feel as stupid as my question sounds probably. And you've done that. We've driven around in Arkansas and you've, you know, showed me things and probably thinking to yourself, what is this guy asking me about? But I remember one time I was in Louisiana at Jeff Duron's farm and they were loading out of a bin. They were loading a truck. And I was like, oh, this, I've never seen this. This is cool. And I had my video equipment with me and I climbed up to the top of the grain bin and I'm filming down into it, all these different angles. And Jeff's brother walked over to me and said, what's he doing up there? And Jeff said, I don't know. He's filming. He said, why? And when I came down, they were hassling me. And I was like, you guys see this every day, multiple times a day. I've never seen this. And actually, we posted on social media and it became one of our most retweeted videos in, you know, out of Chicago and stuff because nobody's seen that. People are curious. And
right.
So it was fun.
Yes, yes. I find that the combine running, the tractor running, you know, just anything on the farm goes viral almost because so many people have never seen it and just have no, they can't even visualize, you know, they have no concept of it. So yeah, those things do draw a lot of attention, which is good for us, I guess.
Yeah. And it's important. It gets to the telling the story thing, which I know you're passionate about. But one of the big things, and particularly as we look at now and, you know, with the ag economy struggling and farmers, you know, really not knowing if things are going to pencil out, you know, you hear up here, and I'm in Washington, D.C., and, you know, people don't get it. They don't understand what's involved, right? Mm-hmm. And they think, when they think of farmers, they say, oh, you know, they have a pitchfork and whatever. And it's like, well, actually, they have an $800,000 combine that's, you know, that costs more than your house. Okay, and there's maybe five of them. And all the technology and all the things that go with it, the investment, the capital investment in agriculture is so not understood. And we find when we take, whether it's members of Congress or their staffs, or just recently, Cameron and I were in California with a bunch of chefs and research chefs and social media people from one of our restaurant partners. They'd never been on a farm before. They were from you know, Chicago and Seattle or something. They'd never been on a farm and they were so excited. You know, Charlie Matthews took them up in a combine and rode them around and stuff. And they were having the time of their lives and had a newfound appreciation for this grain that they don't think about, that they use a lot. They use in bowls and they use in burritos and they use it every day, but they never thought about kind of where it comes from. And so it's so important to show them and explain. In fact, there was on Charlie's farm, there was a new, I think it's a top secret. I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for saying, but there was some combine there that they had brought over from Europe or something. It was like a $950,000 combine sitting there. And they were, whoever it was, not Charlie, but whoever it was trekking it around the country, testing it in different conditions. And so it was that week, it was in California. And it was like, you know, this sleek black thing. It looked like something out of the Terminator movies or something. But yeah, $900,000 for this thing. So
yeah,
people don't appreciate it.
Well, it's, of course, when you're on Charlie's farm, when I have visitors here on the farm, it's just the best day because when you see those light bulbs turn on for people like you're talking about, for those chefs or just, you know, a congressman's staff or whomever it is, it's very satisfying to me that they made the connection. You actually got through. Now they got a visual. Now they can start taking those numbers or taking that policy or make that bowl of rice, and they can think about us and the people that are behind it. And that's all about telling the story.
Yeah. You talked about it here when you testified most recently before Congress and that, you know, everybody, and I've been in those on the other side of it, you know, the staff, the Senate staff side of it, you know, and people look at their phones, they're writing, they're talking to each other, they're playing Sudoku, whatever they're doing. They're reading up for the next hearing they're going to go to. Mm-hmm. But that when you suddenly made it very personal. It took everybody's breath away and everybody looked up and looked at you and understood it or started to understand it better. And it was one of those breakthrough moments that is that the whole industry, you know, kind of owes you a debt of gratitude, but obviously you were there, you were there for the rice industry anyway, but like to tell your story and to be unafraid to just tell it and let it be emotional and because it is, you know, it's a huge advantage. So we appreciate when people do that. We appreciate when people open up their farm and their operation to, you know, let people see what it is you all do, because it's so far removed from people. It's really important to do.
Yeah. And like you said about the grain bin, loading the truck, we're just so used to it. We don't understand how anybody can not know where a grain of rice came from, but It's just the way of the world. We're just so far removed from the farm. And I think we're seeing the effects of that now, probably to our detriment, probably to the ag community's detriment, because as our families moved off of farms and ranches and into the city, they were really glad to not be doing this hard manual labor, especially at that time, because there wasn't near as much technology. And they didn't go to the city and talk about, you know, cleaning out the stalls in the barns or driving a combine with no cab and eating dust all day. It was hard, hard, tough work. And so we missed like a couple of generations there. And so now I think we're unfortunately feeling the pain from not keeping our story in front of Americans over those years.
Yeah, you know, I was just at the International Rice Festival in Crowley, Louisiana a few weeks ago, and Kirk Satterfield from Mississippi and Jim Whitaker, one of your kind of neighbors, was down there also. And, you know, one of the things they do there at this festival, there's all kinds of rice stuff and, you know, rice queens and eating contests and cooking contests and antique car shows and all kinds of things. But they do an old rice threshing demonstration. And Dr. Ronnie Levy was there, and he has done it every year. And, you know, they're with pitchforks, and they had this old oil engine going. It took them like 4 or 5 minutes to get this thing up to speed running on these belts. And Ronnie's explaining what's happening. And then Jim, and I've got pictures of Jim and Kirk wielding the pitchforks and you know, loading the thresher, and then the very little bit of rice comes out. And Jim was saying afterwards, I was talking to him about it, and he said, you know, when you think about how hard our ancestors had to work, we complain now, and we have all this technology and all this mechanization and stuff, but it's amazing. Now, this is my words, not Jim's, but it's amazing that people kept doing it, because it's so hard. Mm-hmm. It was so hard then with no mechanical help. I don't know. It's something.
Well, and it is a living, but for us, more so, it's a way of life, mm-hmm. you know, and there's been so much talk since the pandemic about in the office, out of the office, work-life balance and all those things that everybody's trying to deal with. And, you know, for the most part, farmers, we have dealt in a work-life balance, an office, out of the office type balance. Okay. That's what we do, you know, because if it's harvest and we're going 12, 15 hours a day, our families just know that that's what's happening, you know, and if you're not home for supper, you're just not home for supper, because that's the way it is. And so I think it's kind of been funny to watch from our seat.
Yeah.
So much worry about the work-life balance. And I kind of had the realization that we've been doing this all along.
You know, I was thinking, actually, honestly, I was thinking about that this morning. I was listening to some other podcast while I was walking the dog, and they were talking about, I don't even remember what, but I started thinking about, how did you do it? So your son played football. Mm-hmm. I'm sure tons of practices and games and stuff like that. How do you do that? Because I think about the soccer that my two kids played. And I mean, I think we've been to every soccer field, you know, within 800 miles of Washington, D.C. multiple times. You know, they're practicing 3-4 times a week, and then there's games 2 times a week and tournaments and all this stuff. And the amount of time that I was on the road, you know, most of it weekends, but not all of it. How do you do that when you're a farmer, when there's no, you can't say, wait, I'll write that paper later. If the farm needs you, the farm needs you. How do you do that?
Well, we have good people. I mean, that's what I say. We definitely, it's not just a bloodline family here. It's all the family. And we try to, you know, if you were working for us, Michael, and your child had an award ceremony today, or they've got a volleyball game this afternoon, we shift and we make it work. And we try to allow all of our people to go and be with their kids and be with their family, you know, for special things like that, because that's a once and done, right? You know, your senior year of football and you're a starter, there's only, you know, maybe 8 or 9 games in a season in high school ball. So, I mean, you just have to step away and you have to leave it in the hands of good, capable people that you have working with you on your farm. And when you come back in a few hours or on the next morning, if something went awry, well, we just have to gather up and figure it out and go forward from there.
Well, it's a testament to you all that you're able to do it. And again, something that's not appreciated or understood. And so it's impressive.
Yeah. And there's a little stress involved too when you walk away in a really busy time, you know, especially because, yeah, football was during harvest. And so, you know, as I'm here managing the logistics of all the trucks coming in here to the grain bins, we got a plan. I'm going to leave it with you guys and trust that y'all are going to follow the plan. If something comes up, well, you know, fortunately, we are all, fortunately or unfortunately, we're all a phone call away, right?
Right, right.
So,
well, and with technology too. I mean, you can look at your water pumps and, you know, on your phone and, you know, so, but yeah, you're right. That's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. Yeah. What else about let's get back and kind of wrap up the Rice Outlook Conference, because I want to be sure and talk about those dates and times and how someone might get registered to be there.
Yep. So thank you. So the website is www.usarice.com/outlook, and the full schedule's on there. You can register on there. And the conference is December 7 through 9, 2025. You can register early, save a couple bucks. You can also obviously even show up, you know, the day of, and you can register on site. But there's something for everybody. You know, that Sunday evening, Sunday, USA Rice has business meetings during the day. And then Sunday evening, there's one of those receptions in the exhibit hall, as I mentioned. It's kind of everybody getting back together and, you know, starting and connecting and stuff with folks. And I'm sure everybody would be in a good mood and talking about their years and stuff. But then Monday morning, it starts with the general session and then the awards luncheon and then educational programming up to in the exhibit hall, and then more time in the exhibit hall, another reception and dinners, and people go off and do all kinds of things, and then we're back Tuesday morning for a wrap up. Dr. Steve Linscomb is going to do a wrap up of kind of the highlights from all the 8 states that are doing outlook and research reports. Steve's going to do a summary of what you missed. There's going to be a session on the ag economy 2026, what does it mean? There's going to be the history of Rice. We have a very interesting historian. He was there last year actually talking about the history of Rice in the Carolinas. And this year he's doing something on the history of Rice in Louisiana. It's really very interesting how, what an integral part of the early parts of this country Rice was. You know, I mean, they refer to Charleston as the city that Rice built. And it's really true. I mean, it's a murky history in places, but it still was a very important commodity and continues to be. So, so go to usarice.com/outlook. All the information's there. You can sign up. You can see the speakers. You can read the bios of the people and see what they're talking about. And we're kind of announcing new things all the time. We have great partners at the universities, University of Arkansas. Dr. Scott LaFontaine's coming in to do something about alternative uses for rice. You know, I think that's one of the things that you talk about, trying to find more value-added opportunities for the grower, right? And so Scott's going to come in and talk about rice being used in beer, not just with Anheuser-Busch, the largest end user of U.S.-grown rice, who is going to have a big presence there. They're building one of their beer-grown here bars in the exhibit hall too, so you don't want to miss that. But Scott's going to be talking about other craft beers and other kind of opportunities to use rice. And Derek Alacone from a Farmers Rice Cooperative out in California is going to come to talk about rice as an ingredient in snack foods and energy bars and things. And then somebody's coming up from J.T. Mellick in Louisiana, from J.T. Mellick in Louisiana, to talk about using rice in spirits. And there will be samples of all of those things.
You're not dropping any hints there, are you? Free samples, right?
One's a distiller. There's free samples. One's a distiller. One's a beer person, and one's chips. So we got everybody covered. It starts at like 9:20 in the morning, but we'll suffer through it. We'll suffer through it.
Okay. And are there any opportunities for sponsorship or to set up a booth still available, or is everything filled?
Absolutely. No, we can do that. I mean, the exhibit hall is pretty full, but we get these spaces that we're able to kind of move things around. And we have some space. USA Rice has some space. Arkansas Rice has some space. And so we are always able to accommodate. If somebody wants to exhibit there, you can do that. Again, usarice.com/outlook. There's information there for sponsors and exhibitors. A lot of the sponsorship opportunities are gone, but come check it out and see what's going on, because, you know, next year we'll be in Nashville and we're going to start early with our, you know, with our plans to raise support for that. But yeah, there's plenty of room. Two of the things that we're going to have that are interesting is our team from Mexico is coming up to do cooking demonstrations. And so they're bringing 3 chefs up from Mexico to show how they do these international trade shows. So that'll be there. And one of the other things, I don't know if you had seen this, but Aisha was talking about our international promotion director for the Western Hemisphere was talking about, they developed a virtual reality game called Harvest Rush. And it's in movie theaters all over Mexico. that people are playing. It's very popular with kids and with adults, and you play this game where you have to kind of scoop, find the American rice, find the U.S. grown rice, and you know, you're hitting things with a hammer. I don't know, but they're bringing the booth, and they're gonna, and so people are gonna be able to play at the Outlook conference. So you've got demonstrations, you've got the Budweiser beer, you've got the Budweiser bar, you've got the Harvest Rush games, and then all manner of services and vendors there too. So, well, if somebody wants to, come on, give us a call. We'll fit you in.
Fit you in. Well, I think that game sounds fun. I'm going to have to be sure and find that one.
Yep.
Before the spirits.
That might help.
It might be better after the spirits. You never know. So.
Yeah, it's actually on the opposite ends of the exhibit hall from where the Budweiser thing is. So you'll be sober up as you walk over.
There you go. Okay. Well, Michael, it's great to have you here. I think we could sit here and chat about all things rice and all the promotions and programs that are going on for quite a while. So maybe I'll have you back on one day. But Michael Klein, USA Rice, Vice President of Communications and Strategic Development. Also the podcast host, which you need to check out, the Rice Stuff podcast. Especially if you're a farmer, there's tons of great information on there. So check that out. Check out the Rice Daily. We'll try to have links to all that in the show notes on this episode.
Great. Thanks, Jennifer. Really appreciate it.
See you in NOLA.
New Orleans in just a few weeks.
Yep. All right. Bye-bye. This is Jennifer James with Field Good Life, and I'll see y'all in the field. Be sure to like, subscribe, and leave a review so you stay in the loop. Let's keep telling the story.